KCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Thank you for joining us, friends. We have a lot of critical information we need to share with you this hour, and I really hope you can stay with us for the full hour today. Due to the significance of the information, and we know that there are very, very critical matters that are before us. We are just 6 weeks away from the presidential inauguration. And now with having just passed 5 weeks since the election, there are many cases and issues pertaining to vote fraud in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, and Arizona. I've never seen a presidential election like this in my lifetime. And on top of what's happening in the individual states, now we have the Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, filing a lawsuit with the U.S. Supreme Court challenging the election procedures of Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. He, in essence, is saying that these states failed to follow their constitutional law, and now that's impacting us. That's impacting Texas. And now there are additional states in the media being reported, Arkansas, Alabama, Missouri, and Louisiana, that are backing the Texas lawsuit, saying, hey, the practices of these battleground states, they're impacting us too. President Trump is calling this the big one, and plans to have his legal team intervene. Yesterday, the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies voted down a resolution to acknowledge Joe Biden as president-elect. Meanwhile, you have the likes of Democrat Congresswoman Stephanie Murphy from the greater Orlando area saying, my family fled a communist dictatorship, so I've never taken America's democracy for granted. The president's claims of election fraud are discredited and dangerous, nothing more than a cynical attempt to subvert the will of the American people. While addressing these issues, we welcome back constitutional attorney Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Matt, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
Matt, just before we get into this matter of the election fraud case and all the updates that are taking place, Liberty County, you are just embroiled in so many issues right now, and I'd like you to quickly tell us about you filed another appeal with the Supreme Court as it relates to churches you're representing in the state of California.
Yeah, we just filed it within the last couple of hours at the U.S. Supreme Court. We were there last week with a victory on Thursday, and that was December the 3rd. They gave us a great victory, and that sent shockwaves throughout the country. The governor of Colorado got the message because that Monday by 5 p.m., he removed all the attendance restrictions on churches and places of worship, calling them essential, and he did it specifically because of what happened in our case and also the week before in the New York church and synagogue case. But this judge down in California didn't get the message. And so, you know, on the same day that the Supreme Court ruled last week, December 3rd, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals did the right thing, immediately set aside its rulings as the Supreme Court directed, set aside the lower court ruling, directed this lower court to issue a decision, review the case in light of the Supreme Court's directive. It's a very clear roadmap. In New York, the restrictions were 10, 25, and 50. They said it's the most severe restrictions they'd seen. There was irreparable harm because of that kind of restriction on worship. In California, it's worse. It's 99.9% of California is on a no worship. I'm talking about not one person, not two people in a place of worship, not even in your home with someone who doesn't live there. It's criminal. We have a letter from a criminal prosecutor threatening daily criminal charges, up to a year in prison for each charge, daily $1,000 fines every day that the church is open.
My.
That applies to pastors, staff, and parishioners. And so last night we were back in federal court with this Obama-appointed judge, and when we were before him before, between the time we filed the case and the time he finally issued a ruling, it was almost 60 days, 2 months. It's just like the house is on fire, but he doesn't care. And last night, we had a 10-minute hearing. That's it. And the judge refused to even entertain the argument from the United States Supreme Court. Instead, wants to kick the can down the road. another hearing some other time into the future. I said, you know, this is irreparable harm. The judge could care less. It's like the house is on fire. We need to put out the fire now. And
yes,
the judge is just like looking at the fire and said, no, let's just continue to let it burn for a while.
Isn't he standing in contempt by his actions?
You know, there's no official contempt, but it's openly just ignoring the United States Supreme Court, the highest court in the land. He is not above that court. The Court of Appeals did the right thing. They follow what the Supreme Court did, but not this judge. And so, you know, we have one of the most holy days of the year for Christians. You know, lots of churches were closed on Easter. Now we're getting ready to approach Christmas, and it's just around the corner. But this judge could care less. And so last night, one of our attorneys worked through the night until about 5 a.m. this morning, and we worked on it this morning, and we filed it a couple of hours ago at the U.S. Supreme Court. We're back there again. You know, it's like that we have the key to open up the cells to let the captives free. But these governors, in this particular case, both the governor, he could care less in California, and this Obama-appointed judge, he could care less in California as well. So we're going to ask the Supreme Court, bypass them and issue the injunction. We can go back to the court, spend time in there, and waste time before this judge later. But in the meantime, give us the relief. Stop it now, because I'm telling you, every day, the pastor has to wake up. The parishioners have to wake up and realize that today they could be criminally charged. They could be a defendant in a criminal lawsuit. They could face daily $1,000 fines that are accumulating. No person, no pastor in America should have to make the decision between attending worship or going to prison.
My. Matt, it is absolutely outrageous, and a rogue federal judge here in this regard. So you're asking the court, the U.S. Supreme Court, to issue the injunction themselves?
Yeah, so what the Supreme Court did, it's essentially, you know, what they did last week is, you know, the week before they decided the case out of New York, and it's pretty clear, pretty clear. Our case has even worse facts than that, more severe restrictions. So in our case, they did what they normally do. Once they just decide something, and there's a similar case, they did something very extraordinary, and they granted our petition, and they then directed by issuing a roadmap, and it's a roadmap. It's kind of like, how do I want these lower courts to go? Here's the roadmap. We just issued it the day before Thanksgiving. Follow this roadmap.
Right.
When you follow that roadmap, it's one inevitable destination. If it's unconstitutional what's happening in New York, it's even more unconstitutional what's happening in California. So follow the roadmap. You have no direction to get off an exit or stop at a rest station. Get to the destination and get there now. And when this judge refuses to do it, the Supreme Court said, if you need additional help, come back to us. Our door's open. So that's why we're back.
My. Folks, be praying for Liberty Counsel. Be praying for the suit as it's gone back before the U.S. Supreme Court, just filed a short time ago today. And, folks, again, they're fighting on behalf of your religious rights here across this nation, a very, very critical issue. We could spend the whole program on that issue, but, Matt, we're going to draw back here to the vote fraud cases in the U.S. Tell us about this lawsuit from the Texas Attorney General. President Trump refers to this one as the big one, saying that, you know, the suit is saying that 62 electoral votes that are part of these states are invalidated because these states made unconstitutional changes to their election laws.
Yes, I have the lawsuit right in front of me, and they filed it directly at the U.S. Supreme Court. They're able to do that because the Supreme Court has what's called original jurisdiction regarding controversies between the states. So when one state sues another state, you don't go to a lower court, you don't go to an appellate court. That issue goes directly to the United States Supreme Court. And that's what they did, and that's the issue that they have. And you say, well, this is a state issue. These are things that they're doing in the state. Well, look, when you elect a federal officer or president of the United States, doesn't matter what's happened in the states, that is a federal constitutional issue because it affects everyone, particularly the election of the President of the United States, which is a national election. There are 62 electoral votes that are part of these states that were sued, which includes Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And they say right now, Texas lawsuit said right now, without those 62, Trump presumably has 232 electoral votes, and Biden 244. Neither one would have the 270. And so consequently, those 62 electoral votes will determine the presidential election. But here's the problem. In each one of those states, they violated election law. The Constitution states that the legislatures have the ultimate authority on setting the rules regarding the election, and it has to be in concrete, in the statute, and a non-legislative person, like a Secretary of State or a governor, cannot change that. It's the legislature's ultimate prerogative to do that. Secretary of State can't come in and say, well, we're going to allow absentee ballots to go and come in after the legislature said that they're permissible. You can't do that. That's not possible. Moreover, it has to have uniform application within the state. So you can't have this discriminatory application within a state from one county to another. And they go into exceptional detail about how that has actually happened, because the secretaries of state or the governors, they have actually moved the timelines in all these states with regards to these mail-in ballots. And they're clearly already set forth in the state statutes. They have no authority to do that. And they have allowed mail-in ballots to come in long after the deadline. The reason why the legislatures create these deadlines to get mail-in ballots is for the obvious reason. So that when the polls close on election night, within a short period of time, these mail-in ballots have already been in, they've already been counted. Now you're just waiting for the in-person votes to come in, and those are counted on that day. That's why we get the results of the election so quick. But when you say that, oh, you can mail in your ballots much, much later or even after the election, that's why you have this never-never land as to who ultimately has won the election. And that's what has happened. In every one of these places, there's all kinds of irregularities that these secretaries of state have done. And they have violated the law, and consequently they have affected every other state because of their irregularities. These states will determine who is president of the United States. That's why Texas has a direct interest, as do every other of the states outside of those four.
You know, I believe these states that are targeted by this suit, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, they have to respond by tomorrow?
Yeah, they do. I think I've got the briefing right here, and it is very, very solid. Let me give you some figures here if we have just a few minutes. This is just on Georgia, and this is besides all the moving around and the new rules that they did. Let's just look at Georgia, okay? 16 electoral votes in Georgia. A vote gap right now of 12,670. Well, Georgia has allowed approximately 100,000 unqualified persons to register and cast votes that are illegal. Let me just give you some numbers if we have a moment.
I tell you what, Matt, we're 10 seconds from the break, so let's pick up with this right after the break. Matt Staver is with us from Liberty Counsel with a vote fraud case update, and now we have the Attorney General of the state of Texas filing a lawsuit to the United States Supreme Court against Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, saying that it's because you didn't follow your constitutional law that you are negatively impacting our votes and our electoral votes here in the state of Texas. Other states are cheering on, saying, yes, you're impacting us too. We're going to dissect this further after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, have you ever seen that bumper sticker of a fish with legs? What's that all about?
Chris, that bumper sticker is a direct insult to Christians and the God of Christianity. It's a perversion of the Christian symbol of the fish, which has been in place ever since the early church days. It's interesting to note that this has almost become a religious symbol with evolution. We've been saying for a long time that evolution is a religion, and now they have their religious symbol. Chris, they have to have symbols because they really just don't have any evidence that evolution has occurred. Evolution is not a science. It's the religion of naturalism, the idea that there is no supernatural God behind it all. At least that's how I see it from a back-to-Genesis perspective.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
Friends, I hope you're listening with both ears on today. Information you're gaining today will not be covered by the major media across the nation. You're hearing it on Crosstalk. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council. Their website, lc.org, lc.org. Matt, we're talking about this lawsuit filed by the Attorney General of the state of Texas against four states, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, saying, hey, what you're doing is you're negating our electoral votes from our state here by your mismanagement, by your not following the law. You said you had some shocking numbers for us. Tell us about it.
Yeah, and this just looks at Georgia as one of those four states. And so Georgia has about 100,000 unqualified persons that have registered and cast votes, and yet the vote margin is 12,670, but they did 100,000 unqualified voters. Let me give you the numbers. 66,247 underage persons were allowed to register illegally, then voted. 8,718 potential number of persons deceased prior to the date the state records accepted the votes, relying upon these unacceptable, unavailable records. And 2,560 felons voted. 2,423 unregistered persons voted. 4,926 persons registered in another state after they moved out of Georgia voted. 1,043 persons registered with a P.O. box that's not legal to do in Georgia voted. 15,700 people who had filed a national change of address with the UPS as having relocated to another state prior to Election Day voted. 40,000, and here's the last number I want to get, 40,279 persons who moved without registering voting in their new county. Now, and it goes on and on and on. So you have an unbelievable mess in these four states.
Now, how can you ever reclaim those votes? We no longer know who cast those votes. You mentioned all these unqualified ballots, but we can't go in there and bring those ones back.
And that's the relief that is being requested by the Texas Attorney General's lawsuit, which I think is the correct relief. And that is, they say, they go through some of this and they show how messed up these four states are, how much they have violated the law. And so consequently, you can't trust the results. Then they say the remedy is that, and this is absolutely true, for the state legislatures to be able to appoint the electors, because the electors that are being appointed based upon the votes, you can't trust. They're illegitimate. So what we need is the state legislators, the legislatures, to appoint those electors. And obviously in these particular cases, the state legislators are controlled by Republicans. But they're not, that's not the point of it. It's just that that's how you make this, that's how you salvage this situation. But you cannot rely upon these votes because they're so fraudulent, illegitimate, and you can't rely on them. And you'd have not enough time to do it. But then they also go through the timeline. And, you know, a lot of times the media says, well, December 8th was the safe harbor and December 14th is the time for the electors to vote. And then it's over. Well, no, that's not true. Those are not constitutional required dates. They're not required by the Constitution. In fact, January 20 for the swearing in is not the ultimate deadline either.
Hmm.
What we have here is, you know, January 6 is when the House comes in. That's when the new House gets sworn in. And what they typically will do is, in the normal course of time, you have this so-called safe harbor, which was December 8th. Then you have the actual electors get together, and the electors vote. But that doesn't end everything, because on January, when the new Congress is sworn in this case it's going to be January 6th, they then look at the votes that were cast by the electors, and they say, what's the numbers? Who has who, and who is the ultimate president-elect of the United States? If there is no resolution, if you still have this up in the air that nobody gets the 270, then you have a contested election. And what you do at that point in time is you go to the 12th Amendment, and then each state gets one vote. There's more Republican states than there are Democrat states. That's assuming that by that time you still don't have it resolved and you have this happen. But what the lawsuit is recommending as another option is for this court, Supreme Court, to block the electors that have been appointed because of these flawed systems in the four states and require that the state's legislatures follow the Constitution and their own state law, which they have full authority over the voting process of the United States president in those states, and appoint their own electors. And that is another option, and then you would ultimately have the full number of electors in time for January 6th, but they would be appointed in those four states by the state legislators as opposed to going according to how the vote went, because the vote, you know, as I just went through these numbers in Georgia, I mean, you've got over 100, you've got about 100,000 unqualified people that registered and cast illegal votes. And yet the vote margin is 12,670.
So constitutionally, Inauguration Day does not need to happen in January?
You know, if we don't have a full resolution, it's the Supreme Court's prerogative to ultimately be able to make an ultimate decision. But I think that the way that Texas is ultimately set up in this lawsuit is that the Supreme Court can block the electors in these four states because of the irregularities, because what they're doing is they're diluting the votes of everybody else. And that's unconstitutional. By having these irregular processes, it affects the entire country. Block that and then order the states to appoint the electors. The electors could certainly be appointed in time before January 6th by these state legislators. So I think you can avoid the whole, you know, 12th Amendment if you had to, or the January 20th, if this process that they're requesting is followed, and I think it's a reasonable one.
Has this ever happened before?
Well, we've had the first contested election in 1800. That was Thomas Jefferson, and Aaron Burr was his so-called running mate, and that was up against John Adams, and that was the first contested election. Mm. And as a result of that, the 12th Amendment was added in 1804, and then from there we've had other contested elections. The most recent one in our modern history is 2000, a little bit different situation, but it was a contested election, and it went on until mid-December. But it's nothing new. We've had them in different times with these different contested elections. In fact, the lawsuit by Texas even points that out as well.
Matt, President Trump said his legal team is going to intervene. What does that mean? How are they going to intervene in this?
Well, the case is filed directly with the U.S. Supreme Court. So President Trump obviously has a direct interest in this case. So he's going to ask the U.S. Supreme Court to become a co-plaintiff in the case and intervene, because he's directly affected. Now, we know that some other states have, through their attorneys general, have made supportive comments. I haven't seen any direct evidence yet that they're seeking to intervene or file an amicus brief, but it looks like there's obviously some growing support in the other states for this Texas lawsuit, and I expect we're going to see some additional developments with these other states in one way or another, joining on board, either intervening or through an amicus brief or some other way.
Okay, and as the Attorney General of Texas says, Paxton, saying that it's only the Supreme Court that can really resolve this multi-state dispute.
Yeah, it's only the Supreme Court. You know, if you try to file this in some lower court and it takes too long, it's only the Supreme Court. And that's why the Constitution, this is interesting, the Constitution has, you know, it's a very, it's a document that has been highly thought through by our founders, and then through history we've learned from experience, and that's how we got the 12th Amendment. But they envisioned these kinds of situations where you would have a contested election. They envisioned these situations where you'd have a controversy between the states. And when you have a controversy between the states, you don't want it resolved at a local level, go through the appeal. You want one Central Supreme Court of the United States to have original jurisdiction. It's one of those few areas that the Supreme Court, you can file directly with them, and that's what Texas did.
Okay, so the lawsuit's been filed from Texas to the United States Supreme Court against these four states. These four states then have to file response briefs, we understand, right, by tomorrow. What happens then?
Well, then at that point in time, the justices conference, and they typically conference on Thursday and Friday, or Thursday or Friday, depending upon their week, but that's the typical day they conference. So we're talking about Wednesday. I mean, I have no doubt, and because of stuff like this, you know, they're working on the weekends as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be reviewing this before the end of the week, and we should have some kind of response very soon in terms of what the next step is. And that could be over the weekend. It could be, you know, by the end of the day, Friday, but it'll be quick. It could be early, you know, next week. But I anticipate we're going to have something from the Supreme Court. And remember, this is not the only case pending. The media mentioned about this Pennsylvania case with the Republican Party being thrown out. But, you know, the fact is, I think it's they overlooked the fact that there's already a Pennsylvania case there. And it's a very strong one, I think. And that is the same issue that Texas raised. And here's what it is. Texas legislature said the ballots have to be in at a certain time. Well, the that was changed, not by the legislature, but they ultimately extended it for, what, 3 days after the election, that you could bring in these absentee ballots. And that's why Pennsylvania says, oh, we're not going to know by the end of election night who won the election. Well, that's a problem because the legislature didn't extend that, and that's the case before the U.S. Supreme Court right now. And that one decision could ultimately invalidate all those many, many absentee ballots that came in after November the 3rd at the election day. And that is pointed out. That's just one of the many irregularities that the Texas lawsuit points out.
Matt, and while that's going on, we've got other issues going on, too. I mean, right now there's already this forensic examination going on of the Dominion machines in Michigan. What is a forensic examination?
Well, they have some experts that are evaluating the technical part of this situation. And it's just like more of a scientific kind of a approach. But these would have to be computer experts, software experts, engineers that have experience in computer software and computer hardware and how these things work, and they'll have to evaluate. So that's going on right now. These Dominion voting machines and the Smartmatic system and those that operate with that kind of system, they're very, very problematic. First of all, you know, if you look at the media, they would think, oh, there's nothing wrong with absentee ballots. Well, back in 2005, Jimmy Carter was chairing a bipartisan task force, and they came out with about a 100-page document saying how problematic absentee ballots are because they're fraught with fraud. Then you say, oh, well, the computer system is so easy, you know, we don't need to worry that it was hacked. Well, if you go back in Politico a couple of years ago, they have an article of a guy showing how easy it was to hack a computer. Hack one of these voting machines and skew the process. That's political. That today they would say, oh, no, there's nothing wrong with it. But Politico wrote this article.
Yeah.
New York Times wrote the article in 2012 about absentee ballots. You know, if you look at Dominion and Smartmatic, they've had a history of these kinds of problems and fraud, not only in America, but around the country.
Yeah, how is it that the president of Venezuela is who it is due to this equipment? Matt Staver with us from Liberty Counsel. Folks, I've got a ton more questions. We're going to run by Matt here today. We're talking about, well, we're giving an update here to the vote fraud cases, with the most significant coming out of the Texas Attorney General's office now, filing directly with the United States Supreme Court. We'll be back in 1 minute.
High in the Swiss Alps, Lucian, a lonely, frightened 13-year-old, is overtaken by catastrophic events as he causes little Danny to fall off of a cliff. Lucian finds himself an outcast with his family, his school friends, and especially the very hostile Annette, the sister of Danny.
Danny, I told you not to talk to Lucian. He'll only hurt you again.
Bitterness and anger set in. As Lucian finds solitude in the nearby woods, he comes across a woodcarver who helps him find the peace he was looking for, that not only changes his life, but that of others as well.
You may be able to run away from the village, but you can't run away from yourself.
Treasures of the Snow quickly captures the heart. It's a story of friendship, forgiveness, and redemption. Treasures of the Snow is available on DVD for a donation of $16 or more by calling VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
With us today on Crosstalk, constitutional attorney Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel. Their website is lc.org, lc.org. Matt, we were just talking about Michigan before the break here, and we understand that the Michigan House Oversight Committee chair has told the CEO of Dominion, you appear before us or you're going to be subpoenaed.
Yeah, and if you look at Dominion, you go back to Venezuela, where Smartmatic was actually deployed and developed, and it was to skew the election of Hugo Chavez. And then it was also used in the Maduro election, where he was losing by a significant margin, and then they just took all the reporting offline. Sound familiar to what happened here on November the 3rd, where they just stopped counting the votes and stopped reporting?
Mm-hmm.
Then they modified the software, they go back online, and magically Maduro wins by 200,000 votes, makes up this big deficit, wins by 200,000 votes. That was because of the Smartmatic machine. Then Smartmatic is requested to come into the Philippines, and then they asked Dominion to come in and help them out. So they were in that Philippines election some years ago. It was fraught with problems. The Manila Times issued an article blasting the Smartmatic program and so forth. Well, Dominion then, according to a lawsuit, stole the Smartmatic operating system, and there's a lawsuit by Smartmatic against Dominion. And Smartmatic now is operating with that, or Dominion is operating with that Smartmatic voting software that was designed to fraud the people in votes.
You can't commit fraud against our fraud.
I know. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And so that's being used in the United States, and now we know that some of these Smartmatic machines were actually attached to the internet, despite the denials that Dominion, they were attached to the internet, and that ultimately opens them up vulnerable for fraud when some company office in Colorado was working with another Dominion voting system. And they were transmitting something on the screen by internet. Those just really open up a lot of fraud. But look, let me give you some other crazy numbers here. This comes out of Pennsylvania. December 4, 15 members of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, led by Francis Ryan, issued a report to Congressman Scott Perry. It's called the Ryan Report, right? Now, here's what some of the findings are. This is Pennsylvania. One, ballots were with no mail date. That total is 9,005. In other words, they got ballots, but there's no date that they were mailed on those ballots. Two, ballots were returned on or before the mailed date. That total is 58,221. That means you got a ballot, but you get it returned before the mailed date is stamped on it.
So you received it before the postmark.
Exactly.
Wow.
And then here's three. Ballots returned one day after the mailed date. Total is 51,200. And so this lawsuit says these nonsensical numbers, this is the Texas lawsuit, alone total 118,426 ballots and exceed Mr. Biden's margin of 81,660 votes over President Trump. But these discrepancies pale in comparison to the discrepancies in Pennsylvania's reported data concerning the number of mail-in ballots and so forth. It goes on. Mm-hmm. It goes into some more. And it goes on to the Ryan Report, continues on. And it finds a discrepancy of approximately 400,000 ballots from November 2 to November 4 that they cannot explain. 400,000.
And yet you have people in the media who show us the proof. It still had unverified proof.
This has become a Pravda kind of media from the former Soviet Union. It, like Pravda, which was the arm of the state media in the Soviet Union, has apparently gotten new life in the United States.
Yeah.
And this media that we see here, including Fox News, they are just completely ignoring all of these irregularities as though nothing exists. There's nothing to see here.
And Matt, and with that, I mean, here, so we have Georgia. They talked about, oh, we have to stop counting. We have this water main break. And come to find out, it was nothing but a fixture in a single restroom that was overflowing.
Yeah, and so they stopped. They said they supposedly stopped voting. And then, of course, you had the video, the surveillance video.
Yes.
Where the girl who was blonde hair with the braids tells everybody, we're going to end for the night, stop counting, we'll see you tomorrow, no more entry tonight. So the people leave, the media leave, the observers leave, and that same person who set up a table, now these people that stay, a small handful, go to that same table, and underneath the table that's covered by a cloth, they pull out four black suitcases filled with ballots. And they process them from about 10:30 or so until about 1 o'clock, almost 2.5 hours. And that could have been a processing of about 18,000 ballots. And, of course, Biden won by just a little over 16,000. And you know that every one of those ballots that they're processing after hours, when they frauded everybody in suitcases, they're all Biden votes.
Also in Georgia, Matt, I mean, in this very populous DeKalb County, officials can't find chain of custody records for absentee ballots. Now, chain of custody is absolutely critical.
Yeah, if you're doing something in a court of law and you can't prove the chain of custody, that it was in this person's possession, never let out, and it went from person A to person B, never let out, and now this is the exact same thing that the police officer picked up, for example, this particular item at the crime scene. It was kept, it was handled, this is the chain of custody. If you can't prove that, then how do you know that that particular item actually comes from the crime scene? The evidence will be thrown out. We're talking about voting. We're talking about the fundamental foundation of a free society, to be able to have the freedom to vote and to select our leaders. And when it is so messed up like this, without the chain of custody, we don't know where these things came from. We don't know who had them. We don't know anybody in the meantime that might have put their finger on them. That's a real problem.
Matt, in addition to this, now this lawsuit from the Texas AG is against four states, and yet there are two additional ones that have been up in the air with laws, Nevada, Arizona, and we just, Arizona had a recent FBI raid in a home for voter data theft probe. We also see the Arizona Supreme Court just turned away an important case that there are legislative leaders calling for an audit now of Maricopa County election software and equipment. Anything about Nevada and Arizona, why that was not named in the suit, or what's happening there?
You know, I don't know why Texas didn't name them in the suit yet, but it may be for, you know, just expediency in terms of all the data that has come in. It was some of these other states that were being focused on quite heavily, and there's a lot of information that's coming out of those, and those states would be enough, for example, to make a huge difference on the national election. But that doesn't mean that, you know, Arizona has problems and Nevada has problems, and some of those problems are a little different, but some of them are just as bad as what we see in these other four states, Michigan and the other ones that we have here, Georgia and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin.
There's also a number of foreign countries coming into all of this. I mean, there's a claim that there were at least 5 million counterfeit ballots printed in China. We've heard of involvement from Iran, and earlier this week in the Epoch Times, they reported of a voter rights group notifying the DOJ of a Pakistani link with the Nevada election email system.
Right. In fact, the Pakistani CEO of this company was actually CC'd by the election official staff member when they were replying to this request by True the Vote. True the Vote was asking for information, and they got a response. And guess what showed up on the response? In the reply section that the Nevada official put in there, it's the CEO of this Pakistani company. Why is the election official in Nevada copying an official head of a Pakistani company? We're talking about elections in the United States of America. What does a foreign country have to do with that? So there's lots of other issues going on, too, because Dominion says, oh, well, they don't have any outside foreign influence. Well, we do know that they have a certain patent that is held. There's a person who has a lien, if you will, or interest in the patent, which is a Chinese bank. So we also know that there's allegations that they have connections with other foreign countries as well, that some of this data was being sent to.
Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel with us. Matt, I'm going to continue to probe you here because I want to get this information out. Yesterday, there was a vote by the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies that voted down a resolution to acknowledge Joe Biden as the president-elect. How significant is that?
Well, I think it really is significant. It's a bipartisan committee that is legislative, and it is made up of three Republicans and three Democrats. So somebody might just simply discount and say, oh, it's a partisan vote against Biden. Well, the problem is I don't ever recall that ever happening before in our history, certainly not in our modern history. And you can pass it off as, well, it's a partisan vote. But on the other hand, we're talking about individuals who they say, and this is why they did not select, start the process to acknowledge Biden as the president-elect, is that that committee, that inaugural committee, should not be deciding who is president-elect while the process is still going on. You know, the media wants to pretend that Biden is president-elect, yep. It's over with, nothing to see here, let's go on, Trump ought to concede. That's their narrative. But that's not the actual narrative that's going on. That's not the reality that they are ignoring. And this commission recognized the reality. There is no president-elect. The process is being contested. It's still in dispute. The process is still ongoing. It would be inappropriate for that presidential inauguration committee to acknowledge anybody as the president-elect.
Friends, again, and so many issues going on here. We have a Michigan poll observer indicating the military ballots all look like Xerox copies, and guess what? All for Biden. Matt, there's another thing that's stumping many, and it has to do with the congressional races that still have not been called. I mean, we are 5 weeks after November 3rd. What is the holdup?
Well, it's the same problem that you got with these ballots. You know, the Democrats, before 2020, and before COVID, the Democrats and the Republicans, they all agreed, and all the studies agreed, that these absentee ballots were problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And as they get closer to 2020, they begin to see Trump has an incredible movement. And so we've got to figure out a way to fraud the system, frankly. And so they came up with this narrative of pushing these absentee ballots. And it looks like it was a massive coordinated effort because it's very consistent in the various states that are contested right now. I think it happened in other states that are not contested, but President Trump won by such overwhelming margins, the fraud didn't affect it. And so now, as we're moving into 2020, and they're trying to do everything they can to stop President Trump, and they'll do everything that they can, including destroy our freedom and the essential foundation of America, which many of them don't care for anyway, including George Soros. And so now we get into 2020, and they're pushing this absentee ballot, and the media becomes their mouthpiece. Oh, there's nothing wrong with it. Even the New York Times, which had an article in 2012, oh, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just Trump is exaggerating. The election is going to be stolen. Oh, it's no problem. It's fine. And then what happened, I think, on Election Day is all the polls, just like 2016, predicted that Biden was going to swamp Trump just like they predicted in 2016. That was wrong. And when they saw the results coming back in, they had to resort to Plan C. They already had the absentee ballots, but now they had to do their absentee ballot dump to change the result.
Matt Staver with us. Folks, we'll have time for very brief questions or just a couple sentence statements. Our number 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. We'll be right back.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. The other night, we broke on our live national television show the story of Mary Fanning and Alan Jones. They are national security authors and researchers, and they're reporting from firsthand knowledge that Fox News knew about the hammer and scorecard software that could be used to steal an election. Well, reportedly, Fox News knew about this as far back as 2013. They report that Carl Cameron actually went and traveled and met with the man who wrote the software, Dennis Montgomery, spent a week with a film crew filming his computer as he demonstrated how an election could be stolen. Why has Fox News sat on this since 2013, according to their report? Does this help us understand why Fox News flipped on the night of the election? Or did they just publicly flip? Maybe they flipped a long time ago. For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House.
Listening to Crosstalk on BCY America. Matt Staver with us today, constitutional attorney from Liberty Counsel. And just before picking up the calls, Matt, I'd like us to look just a moment at the ramifications here, because we are getting the picks of Joe Biden. If he does win the presidency, we are getting the picks that he wants in various positions, and it was just announced whom he is picking for his Secretary for Health and Human Services.
Yeah, and it's Xavier Becerra. And by the way, Biden didn't even know how to pronounce his name. He called him Javier Becerra when he announced it. So that's how out of touch he is. But this guy is the Attorney General of California. That's who we just filed at the United States Supreme Court. He hates religious freedom because he hates life. And that's the person who ultimately is pursuing the criminal actions against Sandra Merritt, David DeLight. We represent Sandra Merritt, filed criminal charges to stop them from revealing the harvesting of baby body parts by Planned Parenthood. That's Biden's pick. He's got blood on his hands with regards to that. And who started that investigation? Kamala Harris. And so that's where the recommendation is coming from, is Kamala Harris to pick her buddy, pro-Planned Parenthood, Xavier Becerra, anti-religious freedom Xavier Becerra. He's the one who ultimately we won against a couple years ago with regards to the Crisis Pregnancy Center. So he is, and so he would be the fox guarding the hen house. He would be the one pushing abortion all over the country.
Friends, that's we could spend a whole program just on the picks so far, but we want to get to, we have time only for brief questions or brief statements. We're going to begin with Terry. Terry, you're on the air.
Yes, if these Supreme Court rulings do not have any effect and Biden still has the majority electoral votes, would you advise the president, or would you, if you were the president, go ahead with that new executive order he had, even if it meant suspending habeas corpus and declaring martial law, so then military courts can resolve this?
Okay, thank you.
Well, I would hope that we never get to that. So, I don't want to speculate on something like that. I think there's a lot of legal processes that can easily resolve this, and I think some of them we've just talked about.
Some of the former retired generals are advocating that at this point as well.
Yeah, I know. I see them.
Let's go to Holly next. You're on the air, Holly.
Good afternoon, Jim and Matt. God bless you both in this very difficult work you do. I was curious. I obviously have been following this for a long time.
Excuse me, Holly, go right to your question. Time is very short today, please.
Yeah. I was curious what we can do besides just contacting our legislators to both educate the people around us and be involved to really do something.
Yeah, well, you can go, we have some information. I would hope that you could follow it, lcaction.org and lc.org, because we're doing messaging every day, particularly at lcaction.org. Get that, and we have some ways that you can get involved with the various state legislators, particularly the ones that we're talking about. And you can make, your response known quite quickly, and time is of the essence. That's one quick way to do it.
LCAction.org. And the other way is Matt has unfolded so many things. Within a couple hours, this program will be posted at CrosstalkAmerica.com. Mm. Take the link from today, send it out, get it out to others in mass so that they can listen as well. Thank you. Let's go to Danny next in Kentucky.
Hi, I was going to ask your guest, Matt, when everything is said and done with the Supreme Court, what does your guest think? What is the President Trump's percentage chances of remaining president? Thank you, and I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I think the chances are good. I think this Texas case presents a very good challenge. But I think also the case that's been pending there out of Pennsylvania, that's only one case, but that presents a very solid challenge as well. It would affect only the absentee votes, but that would affect the outcome of Pennsylvania, and that itself could throw the whole election in doubt.
Thank you for the call. Paul in Minnesota, you're on the air.
Yes, I went to the election judge, and I was wondering, does paper ballots be a problem with the election fraud, or?
Okay, so are paper ballots a problem for election fraud, Matt?
The paper ballot, you're talking about like when you punch in a dot or
You go in on the election.
I mean, those are much safer. I think the only way to really resolve elections is to have in-person ID voting and not this computer back room kind of potential fraud. And I think you have to have some kind of centralized system that is transparent to make sure that there are audits on these particular ballots or these computers that are even used to count bubble sorts, for example.
Thank you, Paul. Doug is next in Florida. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you so much. Matt, the caller from Kentucky, I think, asked my question. Do you feel in your heart, your gut, do you think Trump will be victorious over all this?
Well, you know, I can't predict what that might be, but I can tell you I believe in my heart strongly by the evidence that Trump overwhelmingly won the presidential election. I believe that there is much evidence regarding fraud and that these elections were illegitimate, particularly in a number of states, and I think that issue should get a fair hearing, and I think if it does, and we'll have to wait and see, President Trump will continue to be the President of the United States.
Mike is next in Wisconsin. You're on the air, Mike.
Yes, just wondering if the Supreme Court decides in favor of the Texas Attorney General, like Wisconsin has a state law that says that it's the election that determines the electors, and they'd have to pass a new law that says the legislators could, according to our Constitution. How does that affect Wisconsin?
Well, I think the Supreme Court can order this consistent, because the legislature at the end of the day has plenary or the full authority over these electors, over the elections, and not other people that are not the legislative body, and I think it goes right back to the legislators. So that's why Texas is asking for the legislators to be the ones appointing those electors in those four states.
Thank you for the call. And very quickly, Ann in Santa Fe, you're on the air.
Yes, if the for voting to not have fraud, if they assign 2 days, one day only Republicans can vote, the second day only Democrats can vote, and on either day none of the tallies are put out, so that no one could then go, oh, they're winning, we have to put more in.
Okay, 10 seconds, Matt, your response.
Well, I don't know if you need to bifurcate them between parties, but you do need to have, I think, in-person voter ID voting, and the counting of it has to be very meticulous.
Voter ID is so important, so thank you, Ann. So we've seen much fraud, and Wisconsin skirted that law as well on voter ID for many of the absentee ballots. Matt Staver with us. LCAction.org is a website. LCAction.org. Matt, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Folks, keep them in your prayers, not only on these issues, but be praying for them regarding the California churches issue as well. Support them. Let them know you care and you're praying. Thanks.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.